In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, December 8, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We start, as we always do on Thursday, with industry chatter. And my guest on the program today is Maria Horton, the founder and chief executive officer of EmmySec. Maria, great to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Francis. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Give me the lowdown, the thumbnail on EmmySec and what you do for your clients.
Absolutely. EmmySec is an information assurance company. We really try to help our customers protect their critical information assets. We're really looking at what might be the benefits from cloud computing, how they can reduce the risks in that, also in protecting them from cybersecurity or some of the mobility issues that we're seeing more of today.
Now, I looked at your bio before you came in today, as I always do, and I see that your last assignment in the Navy was CIO for the National Naval Medical Center. So I have to start with your projected final score for Army-Navy on Saturday.
Navy all the way.
Of course, but what's the score?
Oh, I'd say it's going to be 21-17.
Okay, that's a good one, and that's a great place to start. And I thank you for humoring me on that one. We run the Navy football games here on Federal News Radio, so we'll have a kickoff at 2:30 on Saturday afternoon. As you are working with clients all over government, not just in the medical field as you were at NNMC or in the Defense Department, what are your clients asking you about primarily? Is it mobile computing? Is it cloud computing? Is it security? Or are they also wound up together that it's kind of all this
that's
one
a,
big
that's
thing?
A great question. EmmySec is seeing a number of customers struggling with cloud computing and how to maximize that opportunity, as well as looking at mobility. Cloud computing and mobility go hand in hand when we look at a lot of the experience of commercial customers dealing with the iCloud, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And we also see that the focus is not just on saving money and transitioning, but really looking at the true risks as we go forward. Are there increased risks? Are there some risks we might be able to reduce by moving into a new form? Our infrastructure is changing in America today, and as we transition to mobility, whether it be in the cloud or in the handheld, we really are looking at things from a totally new perspective with our customers. This includes policies. It includes new technologies, things that they want to identify so that they can continue to evolve into the future.
Mm-hmm. How is consumerization of technology affecting that, and what, not just the expectations of the IT professionals in government, but of the rank and file IT users or consumers in government?
EmmySec is seeing that commercialization is the number one driver. The government is, as you know, made up of individuals, and those individuals are bringing innovative ideas and uses to their workplace from their handhelds at home.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing that driving some of the new technologies as well as the responses by government.
It's interesting that you use the term handhelds, because for a long time that was a term that was pretty much limited to communications devices in DOD, and they were pretty much all, my understanding is, they were all proprietary devices. And now I'm hearing not just the military, but vendors talking about handheld devices, essentially iPhones and Androids becoming the platforms for those devices, and those companies pretty much getting into the software business more than the hardware business. Are you seeing that in the areas that you work
we
in?
We are. EmmySec's prediction for 2012 and 13 is that not only will it be the applications, but the services, the commercial services that drive some of the areas of risk mitigation, some of the areas of innovation. And as a result, the term handheld also allows us to think about the fact that there are going to be multiple capabilities on the handheld, whether it is paying for your cup of coffee at the cafe house,
mm-hmm.
whether it is tuning into the school for your children,
mm-hmm.
you will see those capabilities occur. But you're also going to see the size, shape, color, everything about that handheld change, in my belief.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, though, about the business model for that on the industry side of it, because the way that the way that it the vertical looks now, you have the device consumer at the bottom, and then in the middle you have the, for example, you have iTunes, and then you have the app developer at the top. And the customer is used to 99 cents or free is the barrier to entry right now. I'm having a hard time picturing how a vendor makes money with that kind of a model, but at the same time, I'm having a hard time imagining how the vendor says, no, this is something special and specific, and we can't do it for 99 cents a seat. It's going to cost a lot more than that, or maybe we structure the model in a different way.
I think that's very intuitive. I don't think the formal model is developed yet.
Hmm.
I think we're going to see some variations as industry jockeys for position. They may look for different clientele, different customer bases. I also would like to suggest that perhaps our infrastructure itself is changing. There's been a lot of discussion on smart grid technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at the smart grid, the smart grid might actually be where the money is. There's a lot of discussion of whether or not that new platform will combine or interact with the existing platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not convinced yet that there's a single model for business on the handheld, on the devices, if you will.
So the government customer is still open-minded and isn't locked into that vertical that I described sufficiently yet, that there's not room for you or other companies to come along and say, well, that's a fine model if you want to buy songs or listen to podcasts, but this is a different animal.
I think the government's open-minded enough to consider how they might want to do business differently mm-hmm. in different segments.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to wait and see what happens with that.
Because I imagine it would be tempting for the government customer to say, well, this is how I'm used to doing it. If the whole point of this is we're going to bring these things in from home and we want them to work the same way that they work at home, then I just wonder if it's possible that they would then expect the business model to be the same.
They may expect it to be the same, but I think the challenge would be, do you believe that you could get information security, protection from cybersecurity attacks from nation states or others at 99 cents a bit?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's not very realistic given what we have riding on it, which are the economy, jobs, and national defense.
Are the questions that you get about mobile computing and handheld devices and so on primarily centered around security?
Yes and no. I liken the analogy of mobility to where we were with the internet in the mid to late 90s. And I think we are trying to change some of the paradigms of use. And as a result, convenience and usage of mobile devices is most important. The next step is an understanding what those risks are to business, whether it be in the government as a mission or whether it be in the commercial market and the dollars and cents and reputation. So I think that's unfolding, and we will see security drive more of those as we go forward. But we are a little smarter today than we were back then about how these things unfold.
My sense is that your colleagues in the CIO community for a long time saw the convenience as kind of 180 degrees opposite the risk management element. Is that changing, do you think? Are people getting a sense that I can manage the risk and still have the convenience that I want simultaneously?
EmmySec believes that's true. In fact, a lot of times we see folks who consider them to be polar opposites.
Mm-hmm.
EmmySec believes that innovation and security have to go hand in hand. We talk about security generically like it is a single aspect of hardware and software. I would suggest to you that security in the future might be more about our individuality, whether it be an agency, an organization, or a person,
mm-hmm.
and the privacy and reputation that go with it.
So does that mean that some of the agencies that are looking at doing security on a one-on-one, or not one-on-one, but a one-by-one basis, where you're worried more about securing the data as opposed to securing the device, is kind of the trend that we can expect to see?
I think that that's a very smart vision. EmmySec is looking at protecting critical information.
Mm-hmm.
If we think today that there are a number of criminals, terrorists, nation states that are looking at our data and information, isn't it maybe smarter to protect just the information and worry less about what would be the old paradigm of the network and the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And then the software is somewhere in between. We have to protect some of the software because that's critical to decision making and analysis.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the software is as ubiquitous as the telephone, right?
Yeah.
We need it to work. And it's not necessarily the most important aspect.
It's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way before, but that is kind of the old way of doing things, where if you want to protect this mug, you build some kind of barrier around it to protect it, and that is kind of what we've taken toward mobile devices and all kinds of technology devices.
We might be able to reduce that cost. When you ask me about the business model, EmmySec's thinking about, can we reduce the cost because we protect only the information,
mm-hmm,
and not just the hardware and the software. But that also changes other business models, and you know that, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of us in this area make our dollars and cents that way,
mm-hmm,
and we have to get everyone on board thinking things differently because there is no one way to protect our information and data.
Well, I need to take a break. When we come back, let's talk more about that idea of getting people to change the way they think, because that's probably the hardest part of this, I would imagine. We'll talk about that in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Maria Horton. She's the founder and chief executive officer of EmmySec on Industry Chatter today. Back in a moment.
Here's Dr. Daniel Gerstein, Deputy Undersecretary of the DHS Science and Technology Directorate, commenting during a recent panel discussion titled, Can Innovation Survive Budget Cuts?, sponsored by Noblis.
We're also doing something new called technology foraging, to have studies and analysis of where other technologies have been used, what else is out there within the community, and then how to adopt those and bring those forward. I just have been working on a deal between DOD and the FBI and Department of Homeland Security, whereby this interagency facility would do work for all three departments.
To listen to the program in its entirety, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Today's budget-constrained environment requires government agencies to do more faster with fewer resources. Noblis is a science, technology, and strategy organization that excels at turning ideas into innovation. Through advanced technology, creativity, and resourcefulness, Noblis is helping agencies meet their mission objectives and accelerate the time it takes to go from ideas to implementation. Learn more at noblis.com.
Here's Mike Krieger, U.S. Army Deputy CIO, on the Federal Executive Forum on Defense Cloud Computing, sponsored by CA Technologies.
My vision is, and we're seeing it with enterprise email, I can get on with a government or personal computer as long as I have two-factor authentication, and I can access my data and do my work. And we're seeing glimpses of that now. I was in Hawaii last week. From either my government laptop or anybody else's government laptop, I was able to just log on and get my email from the browser.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Okay, you've heard all about how the cloud can support collaboration and save your agency money. That's great. But here's the critical question. Can the cloud be secure? CA Technologies lets you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems, including the cloud. So can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems and data? With CA Technologies, you can. Learn how at ca.com/cloud.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Pentagon says it's trying to make it easier for military members to manage their benefits online. A new web portal, MilConnect, lets DoD beneficiaries manage their health, education, and other benefits in a secure online environment. The new service also comes in the form of an app for Android smartphones. DoD says a version for iPhones is in the works. An accompanying service called eCorrespondence will also let beneficiaries start getting benefits notifications via email.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. We'll hear about progress in a transformation of Customs and Immigration Services. Director Alejandro Mayorkas will join us. If you're worried about the leased government aircraft you fly on, maybe you should be. We'll talk with the National Transportation Safety Board. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Maria Horton of EmmySec, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we talked a little bit before the break, Maria, about culture change and mentality change at the agencies. And when you're trying to introduce different business models or different approaches or different solutions the way you are, particularly in the mobile space, but all across the technology landscape today, what are some of the techniques that agencies are using to get their people to come along with them that some of the visionary leaders are using?
I think one of the best examples today, Francis, is the fact that we've seen the bring your own device. And one example, of course, is the iPad, right? Mm-hmm. There has been a very rapid transition to using that for convenience. And so as they're bringing it into the government and the agencies, what we're seeing is the experience, the light up of what else they can do while they're at work. Mm-hmm. And that leads the way for policy changes and then allows you to work with them to get the best cybersecurity capabilities as we go forward.
Mm-hmm.
It gets them moving. So you have a chance to talk about a non-contiguous network. That's a really big word that means that we don't all have to be connected in the same place.
Right. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm seeing this transition differently than other technological transitions. The early adopters at the agencies, in my observation, of the iPhone and the iPad and other kinds of mobile smart devices were the high-level people. In the past, it didn't strike me that that was the case. It struck me that the people, the early adopters, were lower-level people, and so it was harder in those cases for these people to bring their devices to work and say, we should incorporate this technology. This strikes me as a lot easier because if the secretary of the agency is carrying one of these things around and comes into you as the CIO and says, I want to use this, you're going to go, I should probably make that happen ASAP.
I think that's a great observation. I'd make one minor correction.
Okay.
I don't think it's necessarily from the field, but maybe some of the middle management personnel who've had this experience either from home or with their teenagers mm-hmm. and their children.
Uh-huh.
I think what we're seeing is that commercialization infusion. One of the things that I feel most successful about are my children. They've given me brilliant leadership experience, whether I want it or not. And a lot of people out there probably think about that as well. If you look at the YouTube generation, if you look at all of the things that they can do, that's coming in the middle management, the project management levels,
mm-hmm.
and we're finding work to be easier. And so, yes, our leaders have taken that on board. They've seen it. They're bringing it in, and it has made it easier because they're saying, find a way.
Mm-hmm.
Our customers for EmmySec are getting the instructions that we know there's some potential risk here. Find us the right policy that protects us as leaders of the government.
Mm-hmm.
Also, help us to make sure our other folks who want to use this can use it correctly. And mm-hmm. it has been tremendously easy. So we're seeing some of that.
Shout out to our generation, though, because our experience, or my experience at least, was technologically, 15, 20, 25 years ago. Now we don't need that. We've been doing fine the way we've been doing things before. And that's not the approach that our generation is taking to the ones that are coming after us. Is that fair to say?
I'd say that that's mixed. I think it's fair. I think we have some early adopters and we have some laggards mm-hmm. in that kind of grouping. But we really don't have a choice because we need to be more productive today.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks are more concerned about being productive and efficient than maybe they were previously because it used to be a lot about, we'll think about our budget next year. We know we're going to get this plus a plus up.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have more creative leaders right now in the government who are looking for new ways to either be more efficient or save some dollars so that they can go to another level.
We've talked a little bit about bring your own device, mm-hmm. and we've talked a little bit about security. And obviously there's a juxtaposition there. There's an intersection between those two. But what else is layered on top of the bring your own device trend? Is it a fad or is this a trend, do you think, I guess?
I actually think it could be a tsunami by 2013.
Wow.
When we look at bring your own device, there are a couple other issues I would suggest to you that we need to consider and perhaps make some adjustments for. One is privacy. By bringing your own device, what we are counseling our customers on at EmmySec is the fact that there are privacy issues, there are electronic discovery issues, and there are some boundary issues. We've been pushing telework and looking at how folks can work wherever they might be living or existing.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have to look at how does that impose on their personal life? How does the government's needs need to kind of come to fruition but not step on their toes?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we express concerns with our customers about, do you have a privacy policy for social media? Have you looked at what you're going to do with the handheld device if it needs to be wiped?
Mm-hmm.
Potentially, you might have the only picture of your grandmother who's passed away or your child on there that you absolutely love,
mm-hmm.
and it's been lost, and we're going to wipe that device,
right.
Or it's been compromised.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see some unique issues there. I don't think we'll go back to two separate phones. I don't think we'll go back to I don't really want to talk to you on the phone. We can't do that anymore, right? How many folks have gotten rid of their landline?
Yeah, exactly. I have a scenario that I envisioned at the original announcement of Bring Your Own Device, and I want to lay it on you, and I want you to tell me if it's either a really great idea or completely nuts. Either one is fine, and then tell me why when we come back from the break. My guest is Maria Horton. She's the founder and chief executive officer of EmmySec. My guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
As the single largest generator of jobs for the Department of Defense, Lockheed Martin's F-35 represents more than just innovation and freedom. It's an advanced technology program that fuels our nation's economic engine. As a leading-edge fighter, the F-35 has unprecedented capabilities that will help America and its allies defend freedom. And it's creating direct and indirect jobs for over 120,000 Americans and impacting more than 1,300 suppliers in 47 states across the U.S. Software developers in California, steel workers in Pennsylvania, and engineers in Georgia are all working to secure our skies. The F-35 Lightning II program. Securing freedom, securing jobs, securing America's future. To learn more, visit F35.com.
To make a commitment is to see things through, confident that no matter what the obstacles, we can build something better together. With the planned combination of AT&T and T-Mobile, we're making a commitment to create a stronger network for all our customers. We will invest an additional $8 billion and build out the next generation of mobile broadband to nearly everyone in America. Building that network will mean better coverage, better call quality, and faster downloads. But it will also create as many as 96,000 American jobs, and we will begin bringing 5,000 jobs to America from overseas. We're committed to investing in America now. Why? Well, we know it's good business, because America has always been, and always will be, a smart investment. AT&T. Rethink possible.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives, Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
Halt the Salt. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS Health Beat. Consume too much sodium for long enough, and blood pressure may rise to levels that raise the risk of heart disease and stroke. Americans consume about 3,300 milligrams of sodium a day. The federal recommendation is that people lower consumption to 2,300 milligrams a day, which is about one teaspoon of salt, and for some people to further reduce intake to 1,500 milligrams a day. Janelle Gunn is at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Most everyone benefits from lowering their sodium intake, but there are a few groups: African Americans, persons with hypertension, chronic kidney disease, and diabetes, and those 51 and older who have even greater benefit from lowering sodium.
A common misconception: we get all of our sodium from the home salt shaker.
It's important for people to look at nutrition labels and choose products that are lower in sodium.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Maria Horton. She's the founder and chief executive officer of EmmySec on Industry Chatter today. Now, here's my crazy idea. Well, it might not be crazy. It might be brilliant. And if it is, I hope you'll tell me so. And then I hope you'll tell my boss on the way out. The idea is, I was in the audience when Vivek Kundra first talked about the whole bring your own device idea. And I guess it's been, I want to say, 8 or 10 months ago, not quite a year yet. And I saw the people, the IT people from the agencies in the audience just cringe. And I saw the vendors in the audience start to drool at the idea of the money that they could possibly make by selling solutions for bring your own device. And it occurred to me not too long after that, that maybe the interim step between just bring anything and the environment that we have now, which is still primarily we give you what we want you to have, is some kind of a hot list where some organization, whether it's NIST or the Howard Schmidt's shop at DHS or in the White House or somebody at DHS or whatever, screens a list of devices, maybe 15 or 20 handsets and three, five, a half dozen tablets. And that's the list, at least to start with, that you can choose from. And that might get the bring your own device program rolling a lot faster. Is that worth it, or is that crazy, or why would that either work or not work?
Francis, I would look at that as one way of doing it, but I would suggest to you that maybe that's a little bit of that old paradigm, because it's really focused on the transmission point or the transmitter of information, the phone or the device. I would like us to kind of focus on a new paradigm going forward, which is the information itself within the container of the device. I think that as we spend more time getting comfortable with protecting the information in its entire life cycle, we might get some new solutions and capabilities, especially when we think about cloud computing, right? So we have mobility and cloud computing going to third-party providers. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to protect that information in a mixed environment? One of the other things that EmmySec is working with our customers on is a zero-trust environment. Mm-hmm. If we know that everything we do in cybersecurity has the potential to be for naught with just a single mistake or a misconfiguration, shouldn't we really be thinking about that zero-trust environment and just focusing on how to protect it?
It's great to say you'd like to focus on that dynamic. Are the agencies prepared to be able to do that, though?
In some ways, they've already started that transition. They're using encryption intelligently. They're protecting data at rest. That's a portion of the information lifecycle. So now we have to think about how can we do it on the bring-your-own-device.
Mm-hmm.
As you may be familiar with HSPD-12,
sure.
personal identity verification, we need to think about how we protect maybe two personas on our Bring Your Own Device. Mm-hmm. My personal, who I am, Maria, on the phone, and then who am I in my business world?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe look at that from a dual perspective on a single device. Mm-hmm. That's really focused on information. It also helps to capture the privacy issues that we're going to have as we move forward with that.
Mm-hmm. So. My colleague Jason Miller talked to NIST about that, and NIST is really hard at work on trying to come up with HSPD 12 solutions for mobile devices, and they're starting with a swiper, essentially. You plug this device onto your mobile device, and you're actually able to use your physical card, but I can't imagine that's where it will stop. I would imagine something more sophisticated will come
along.
That's okay.
EmmySec's really looking at some really innovative VC-backed companies, mm-hmm. in which they're looking at new types of technologies, including using the cloud itself to go out, validate who you are, kind of like the soft token fobs, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and then come back to your phone to validate who you are. That gives you an opportunity to be Francis, the individual, and Francis as it relates to Fed News Radio. Mm-hmm. There's a couple different ways to look at that.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be an exciting piece of the market in 12 and 13.
And that sounds like that makes a lot of sense for the vendors like you that work in the private sector too, because there's an application there, as you mentioned, for me, if I'm on my phone to determine I need to buy supplies for here, I can sign in as essentially identify myself as somebody authorized to use, say, a company credit card. Or if I'm just going to buy some junk on Amazon for the fun of it, I can validate myself as just me, private citizen.
Absolutely. I think that all of us need to be thinking about those dual personas,
mm-hmm.
right? We live very complex, interesting lives today, and we're very fortunate because of the technology. We need to think about our technology as giving us all of that additional capability, maybe just in new ways,
mm-hmm.
right?
Speaking of new ways, one of the new ways of doing cloud in the government's FedRAMP, it's been bouncing around for a long time. Guidelines are out today, and I will be interested to hear when we come back from the break your thoughts about how that might affect where we are going forward, because it's kind of, I mean, it's going to be the new rules where, in some cases, some agencies haven't really been following any rules except what they thought they should be doing to suit them. So we'll talk about that a little bit when we come back. Maria Horton is my guest. She's the founder and chief executive officer of EmmySec on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
When you build the world's most complex ships for the U.S. Navy and U.S. Coast Guard, there's no question you know how to do the hard stuff right. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, it's what we do every day. We are a 125-year-old new company built upon the foundation of two legends, Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding, with an unwavering focus on safety, quality, cost, and schedule. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff done right. Visit HuntingtonIngalls.com today.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Don't miss a moment of Maryland basketball. Take advantage of our 5-game flex plans on sale now. Guarantee your seat for the Duke or North Carolina game by selecting 5 exciting games, including 2 additional ACC matchups and 2 non-conference games. Prices start as low as $185. Only a limited number of flex plans are available, so visit umterps.com or call 1-800-I'M-A-TERP to order your tickets today. Maryland basketball. Fear the turtle.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Steve Kemp, Commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service.
FedRooms provides cheaper booked rooms than generally you can get for government rate. We also help agencies select where to have conferences. So you might have 30 people coming from across the United States. You put into FedRooms where they're located, how many people are coming, and it calculates the best choice for you in terms of a city location.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in. InDepth.
Profile America, Thursday, December 8th. This coming weekend is the time that many households across the U.S. will put up their Christmas trees. Many will be artificial trees, either bought new or brought from attics and garages to be put back together. Many other households will buy real evergreen trees. About 3 out of 4 will be pre-cut trees. 1 of 4 will be self-cut from tree farms. It's estimated that about half of homes will display an artificial tree. The remainder will either not have a tree or will use a real tree. Last year, there were 27 million real trees sold and just over 8 million artificial ones. The average artificial tree lasts about 6 or 7 years. Christmas trees are grown in all 50 states. Oregon is the leading producer, while China leads in the production of artificial trees. Profile America is in its 15th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Wouldn't it be great if you could recapture some of the energy used to light all of those holiday displays? Put your hand on a light bulb and you'll feel that along with light, it produces a lot of wasted heat. Vinayak Dravid of Northwestern University says he can tap some of that. He helped engineer a material that becomes hot on one side and stays cool on the other, then turns that temperature difference into electricity.
Part of the light bulb could be hugged with this thermoelectric materials and then can be fed back into electrical grid.
Dravid says the material's unique chemistry allows electricity generation at 10 to 15% efficiency.
We are continuing to improve it further, but even at the 10 to 15 of waste heat converting back to useful energy is an absolute paradigm shift.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Maria Horton. She's the founder and chief executive officer of EMISEC and a former chief information officer at the National Naval Medical Center. So an interesting perspective, both inside and outside government, experience on both sides. I appreciate you being here today. The big news in all of the things that we've been talking about today is FedRAMP, the new FedRAMP. Guidance is out from the Office of Management and Budget. Details on it linked up on our homepage at federalnewsradio.com. And in about 20 minutes from now, my colleague Jason Miller will be in here to talk about exactly what Steve Van Roekel is saying about FedRAMP. As you look at some of the high points of FedRAMP, Maria, what do you see?
I see that the government is really taking the first steps in being the role model for looking at shared services, where there might be some economies of scale. As you know, with FedRAMP, it gives them a chance to be able to utilize some of those shared security controls, be able to evaluate them in a standardized methodology. I think that's a big plus. In many instances, when we started down the security path 10 years ago with the original love bug virus or more than that, the reality was we saw implementation in different stages in different agencies. I think this is a plus for that standardization so that we know what we're getting across the agency specter. I also think it will allow some cost savings. So if you look at the continuous monitoring, the ongoing testing and authorities to operate for the multitude of systems that we have within the agencies, there's a chance for us to save those dollars because of the shared services piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a challenge that's going to be posed to the vendors that we have. There are many, EMISEC has been changing our lines of businesses because we see that it may change what we go after as a line of business and that we're focusing on some of the harder technical skills, the things that you see in what I would call true cybersecurity centers, doing some of the analytics there, a little bit of the patch management and the technical capabilities, because we see some of these simple evaluations going not away, but reduced, certainly, because of the shared environment.
Yeah. One of the things that Jason writes in this story on our website is Steve Van Roekel said FedRAMP will promote the do once, use many approach. Now, it's a noble approach, but it's been tried 80 kajillion times in the history of government, not just in IT, but all across government. We'll do it once time, and then other agencies can just do it all the same way. And it's not always successful. In fact, it's not usually successful. What do you think could be different about FedRAMP that it will work in this case?
I think cloud computing is going to help push that idea. As we move out into a data consolidation center or data consolidation and we look at cloud computing, I think there's less of that hands-on. And as we remove ourselves from those data centers and we're utilizing what would be the telephone, hey, we're going to pick it up and use it, I think there will be a little more trust and comfort as long as we don't have the cyber attacks and we don't have the failure of those systems in the cloud. That will have folks being grateful that they can reapportion those dollars to new innovation and applications, to maybe some new programs that they want to start for an evolving mission. And so I think that will help them move in that transition.
Are your colleagues who were server huggers, do you think, pretty much reconciled to the fact that they don't have any choice on this anymore?
That's a mixed bag. How's that? There are some folks that really like their servers. And we have a new generation, I think, of technology experts who are more or less in love with the handheld like it was a server. And I think we're going to see some very creative applications there. And so I think the server has downsized itself to the handheld. How about that?
Well, that's a good point. I was actually fussing about that very thing to a friend of mine who's been in government technology for many, many years, not too long ago. And I said, I still hear from vendors and from inside the agencies about people who just won't get with the program. And he said, don't worry about it. In 10 years, they'll be gone. In 10 years, they'll be retired. These folks will be either retired or they'll move on to something else. And and this, as I mentioned, is an older fellow. And he said, these kids won't put up with it anymore, referring to the folks that you're talking about who are coming in and taking these jobs.
So let me give you an example why I think that will kind of transition pretty quickly and pretty smoothly. If you look at the underground economy from the cyber attack perspective, because we're always thinking about potential terrorists, they're actually creating things that you can download off of YouTube, the internet, and elsewhere. They're creating those models and applications. So I think that they're going to go more quickly, and we're going to experience almost like an online market of everything that you could possibly want and devise, and our focus will turn towards that versus managing, loading patches, doing some of the other, what I would call hygiene aspects.
We're already seeing that with the black hat stuff. I mean, it used to be you had to be a really brilliant person to figure out all the coding for developing a cyber attack, and now you pay like $30 and you download the thing and you can do whatever you want.
Well, I wouldn't quote that price online, but yeah, that's
probably. Well, I did, and I mean, that very, very low barrier of entry to any aspect of the technology revolution is really what's going to drive a lot of this change, it seems.
It is. And I think the positive of, if I were going to tell everyone, you know, sometimes there is fear and trepidation as we move forward with innovation. Think about it like this. There are going to be some really cool things that we can now focus our time on that's much more valuable in a knowledge society. In that information life cycle, we can think about how we create new information, how we analyze it, and what we want to do with it. I think that's a very exciting aspect to some of these technological changes.
All right. You've made some allusions to some of the things that you expect to see in 2012 and 2013. And so let's crystallize that a little bit and really look at some forward-thinking ideas when we come back from the break. My guest is Maria Horton. She's founder and chief executive officer of EMISEC on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions.
Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at techsystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High, the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise High with GW Basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other health care needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during our big year-end sale now through December 31st. You'll save 35% on our popular Pathway brand nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off natural body care products. Visit us at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda or shop online at myvillagegreen.com. And be sure to catch our top-notch radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, every Sunday at 10 a.m.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Boreon.
Hey, Angie. Wow, you did it, didn't you? You went over to...
Went to Walmart and got the Pioneer DEH44 HD with built-in HD radio technology.
New HD2, HD3 channels, digital sound quality, and no subscription fees.
You got it. Hey, come on, let's ride. Since the Pioneer DEH44 HD is only $120 at Walmart, I'm taking you out for dinner.
Nice.
HD radio. More radio, more value. Now in the car audio department at Walmart.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today, Maria Horton, founder and chief executive officer of EMISEC. And I mentioned before the break that we've talked a lot about where we are today and where we are for maybe the short-term future. One of the things that I hear from CIOs all the time is, I am so consumed with managing what I'm doing today and for the short-term future that I don't have time to really war game for 2 to 5 to 10 years out. You've been thinking about that kind of stuff. It's obvious from the kinds of conversations that we've had today. What are you seeing as trends that are maybe past the edge of the horizon right now, but that should be on radar screens?
I think that one of the big things for 2012 is going to be social media. We've talked a lot about it from everything from the WikiLeaks perspective to Internet 2.0, 3.0. When I think about social media in 2012, I really see some fuller implementations. And by that, I think we're going to see most of the agencies have a social media policy, and it may not be lumped in with their electronic use. It may be separate. And I think from that, we're going to see how they focus perhaps on Facebook for collaboration, perhaps on Twitter for discussion points, outbound to engage other agencies or organizations. I also think there are going to be some internal issues that have to be addressed. EMISEC is focusing with their company, with our company and customers, on data loss prevention, looking at the intellectual property issues, thinking about the privacy issues, not only for our employees and for agency employees, but for the agency itself. You know, is there an impact with HR? Is there an impact elsewhere within the organization? And it really showcases that technology and security really is infused everywhere, and it's no longer just, do I have permission to use something?
Mm-hmm. The social media thing, there are still a lot of people really apprehensive about it. There are some examples of concrete ROI, but not a lot yet. One agency told me, since we've started interacting with citizens on Facebook, we've cut the number of calls coming into the call center. We don't spend as much on call center as we used to. But those are still really limited examples. Do you see more of that kind of thing? Not just the call center example, but demonstrable return on investment from social media?
I don't think it's direct right now, Francis. I would suggest that we're not going to see that for another year or two. I think the first impact with ROI is going to be in the collaboration. I think it's going to be in engaging new people to help us with innovation.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop it, though. And you need to think about it from a reputation perspective. Sometimes there's not an ROI on insurance, but you do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to protect my reputation, or I'm encouraging and advising an MESEC client, I want them to look at how that hand-holding and or sharing of information might actually be like an immunization.
Mm-hmm.
Can they go out and reach out to their customers and make sure that they have real-time information as they need it?
Mm-hmm.
The big ROIs that we've seen have been with disasters. If you look at DHS, FEMA, you look at communication with local communities, that might be the answer to really saving some people and some dollars.
I have a whole lot more I'd like to dig into. That reputation idea is fascinating to me, and we're just completely out of time, but I would love to have you come back and continue that discussion with me sometime.
Would absolutely love to. Thank you for having me.
I'm happy to do it. Maria Horton, thank you very much for coming in today. She's the founder and chief executive officer of MESEC.